So today, as part of the Just Fact podcast series, we're going to be talking to some of our food co-ops that are part of the Just Fact program. We've got a couple of people in the room who are going to be telling us a bit more about their particular food co-op and what is happening and what's going on and how food co-ops are set up and what their purpose is. So I'm Hasina, I'm the Just Fact mobilizer working on the food justice program and working alongside...
I'm Zoe. I'm working with all three food co-ops within the food co-op network of Just Fact.
Hi, I'm Melanie. I work as the food co-op coordinator for Leaders and Community, and that's based at the Teviot Centre.
And my name is Romana, and I run the food co-op at Limehouse Town Hall.
I suppose the best way to get into this is to think about how did food co-ops come about in general, but also thinking about the food co-ops that the Just Fact program works with. And I'm going to throw that over to Zoe, because I feel like your role will probably tell us a lot about the purpose and kind of like backstory of food co-ops.
Sure. So right within this food co-op network, within the food co-op network, we've got these two food co-ops that have just been mentioned, Limehouse Town Hall and Leaders in Community Food Co-op, which is at the Teviot Centre. And also we've got St. Hilda's East Food Co-op, which was like the OG food co-op within this network and started nearly two decades ago. And yeah, St. Hilda's East Food Co-op, you know, it's a food co-op within basically a food desert in the local area. And it provides a completely like open access pop-up shop with food that's basically just above cost price, both organic and non-organic. And it's really well tended. And it's there's like volunteers that do a lot of the running of it, as well as a few paid members of staff. And within Just Fact, St. Hilda's East Food Co-op basically created a project where they helped to set up different food co-op pilots and led on like best practice and training and setup. And then the two that stuck are represented here today. And yeah, and we've got a network. So, yes.
Yeah, so to follow up from that in terms of where our food co-op came from. So last year, the first 6 months of 2022, a pilot was run at the Teviot Centre with Cindy from St. Hilda's East. And it was that 6 month pilot that was so successful that sort of ensured the funding that we got through WEN and another funder as well, that enabled us to restart the co-op on the first year. Now we're going to be going into our second year. So it was the success of that pilot and the support and the help from St. Hilda's East that sort of got us off the ground. It enabled Leaders and Community, and the same with the Limehouse Town Hall, to get the funding to, I guess, place Romana and I in the roles that we're at and allow us to get it really off the ground and to where it is today, which we can talk about more in a moment, to the development of that.
That's amazing. Well, one thing you summarized is, I guess, so a word that's been mentioned for anyone who doesn't know, what do you mean when you say food desert?
Sure. So what I mean by that is that there's like hardly any fresh fruit and veg accessible in the local area. It's really hard to get groceries at all, let alone have much of a choice when it comes to quality or choosing culturally appropriate food. And so St. Hilda's East, one of its core aims is to address this. And I think that it does that pretty well. Like, it's got a really substantial customer base and like people are really committed.
And then, so I'm going to throw this over to you, Romana. What would you say is the purpose of food co-op? So we've touched a little bit on addressing the idea of, you know, a food desert. So there's the accessibility and variation and variety of having food available to a local community that don't have, say, a supermarket or a fresh fruit stall around them. What have you found in your time working at Limehouse?
There is a community around the co-op. So it's bringing in lots of people from various walks of life to come and enjoy fresh fruit and vegetables at a really good price. And the quality and the price sometimes cannot be matched in local supermarkets or in the normal kind of stalls and markets that you get that are not in shops. So it's building a community around food and allowing people to experiment with different vegetables that they wouldn't ordinarily, and helping people to understand what's seasonal and having a better relationship with food, where it comes from, and its journey to the co-op.
So what I'm hearing so far is that food co-ops address the accessibility of food to local communities where there isn't any food within a certain kind of distance. It's educating or kind of informing people about different types of food, having access to food and fruit and vegetables that they might not normally have. And then there's something that's been mentioned, or the word supermarket, for example. You mentioned how you might not be able to price things at the same or like as cheap as a supermarket. So if I was to get the heart of the conversation around food co-ops is, why are they set up? Apart from the things that we've mentioned already, what is it that a food co-op offers that is different to what a supermarket might offer? Like, why would people go to a food co-op as opposed to a supermarket if things are cheaper in a supermarket? What is the conversation? What's the heart of what we're trying to say? What's the purpose of what we're trying to do?
So it also allows for like a time for people to socialize and for people to learn and to be in a space. I've certainly noticed around the Teviot Centre that some of the regular customers we have come out their houses a lot more, and it's a time for them to kind of commune with people and talk about food and talk about recipes and share ideas. And that's certainly something that on that side of things that's been really positive. And going back to the idea of cost is, I mean, we can talk about this more, but one of the biggest challenges we had when we first set up is we were right at the peak of the cost of living. Like at the beginning of this year, we were kind of when we were first setting up, sort of promoting these co-ops that we were opening as something using that word like affordability. And it actually felt wrong. We had to kind of shift that to accessibility because it actually wasn't that affordable. But the really great thing now is the transition that we've made to organic food with the Bridging the Gap pilot, we can actually say now that things are cheaper than supermarkets. So that's something that's really shifted in the last month. And that's organic produce that's cheaper. So we're actually able to sell the organic produce now for less than we were selling the non-organic produce. Obviously, there's a few factors in that. That's the kind of way we're set up with ordering and delivery has changed. So we don't have the delivery fee, so we can bring down those costs a bit. And because we're under this year pilot of subsidies, so can kind of move back to, in a way, what we were hoping for at the beginning is to actually provide more affordable food. I think we can say that now, don't you think?
Yeah, and also I think that we are really responsive to what people want. So that conversation is always taking place every week in terms of what they have, what they like, what the customers are asking for. We're able to respond.
And that's something you don't get in a supermarket. Mm-mm. Back to your original question, mm-mm, is like that. You can communicate with the customers and give them something new each week. And that allows for that kind of conversation to be had with people's needs.
Yeah, I mean, we can't compete on the special offers that supermarkets are running, but we can compete with everything else and the quality that we're getting. And especially now the organic food isn't grown for yield, as in the size, it's grown for flavor and the color and the way it looks. It's very different from what supermarkets offer generally.
And that's really proven in the response that we're getting.
Yeah. Everyone's really excited by
customers now. Yeah.
Why is it important when thinking about the accessibility of food with regards to climate change? You know, this is a massive thing when we talk about climate change, and most people are like, well, you know, I've got other problems. I need to feed my kids. So I can't really think about like being climate conscious, etc. There's a lot of demonizing or kind of this idea that certain people don't understand this. But again, how does it differ with food co-ops, where the food comes from? Why is that important? Who your suppliers? I don't want to kind of lead, but I feel like...
Yeah, no, completely. And that feels, because obviously this is a huge part of, well, what's in all of what we hope to achieve, but also under the Just Fact program, whereas that needs to be part of it. That idea of supporting the climate needs to be part of what we're doing. And that definitely was a challenge prior to this, because obviously we were kind of at a point where we had to go with certain suppliers, and that, you know, the importing was huge and the packaging and all of that we've been trying to get away from. And the difference now in obviously supporting the local farmers, and that in itself is supporting the climate, because they're obviously as local as they can be, in London, and it's supporting the farmers to keep those small organic farms running. And even if, like you say, that we've had the conversation around climate with some of our customers, and admittedly sometimes it's been tricky, but even without that conversation, it's supporting the local people to make a difference in that sense, because we are providing something that's local, reducing carbon footprint by some extent, obviously it's not massive, but it's something. It's actually quite empowering for those, for people to start to use the co-op and understand the difference that they are making, even if it's small. I mean, we can only all make a small difference, really, each.
I think that with our regular customers, they are open to trying stuff that they wouldn't ordinarily have tried. And that's the feedback that I'm getting, is that, wow, we've never had this before. And, oh, my child really loved this. And so we're getting that kind of feedback. And that's all local grown seasonal stuff. And that's what we're hoping to kind of develop further, is not just trying to find culturally appropriate foods, but being able to cook with seasonal produce in a way that, you know, suits different palates.
Being seasonal and being local is massive.
It's massive.
We're thinking about reducing carbon footprint and doing simple things like that, even if certain people might not have the capacity to think about climate change in a larger macro kind of way, but on a much micro level, it is buying locally, sourcing locally.
So I just wanted to interject, because we've mentioned the Bridging the Gap project a few times without having said what it is. But so do you mind if I do it?
Okay.
So Limehouse Town Hall and Teviot's Leaders in Community Food Co-op both have gotten like a stint of funding to reduce organic veg that's grown in peri-urban areas of London, like Sussex, Kent, Essex, etc., to be subsidized to non-organic prices, matching the prices of what you previously sold on the food co-op, which, even though on the deals what doesn't always match supermarket, I wanted to interject this. On average, St. Hilda's East, which does, you know, help to set up both of the other food co-ops, has done like many like cost comparisons. And on average, like the food is 20% cheaper than in supermarkets at both all these food co-ops. Like there is a significantly cheaper price, and like that's part of the accessibility, even if it's not always affordable, because it's not a food bank or a food hub where people can freely access food. But for this project, I just wanted to mention, like, one of the I think powerful things about the food co-ops, which both of you are in these food co-ops that have accessed this collective funding, is that's working towards policy change and a policy recommendation that the government needs to intervene in the food system and actually subsidize organic food if it thinks that it's valuable for the climate, for accessibility, for nutrition, for all of the reasons why it might be considered like a better way to go than industrialized agriculture. And it's not just on individual people to make these changes, because affordability actually does matter, like if you're just trying to eat. And so I just wanted to say that, because that's not something that would be easily accessed by, like, that kind of funding wouldn't be easily accessed if you were, unfortunately, if you're like 20 households, for example. That does take like a bit more of a structure to be held. I'm just trying to like contextualize, like that's a really positive thing that you've been able to do as the type of food co-ops that you are. St. Hilda's East Food Co-op doesn't have that structure. We already sell organic and non-organic, and we're not subsidizing the organic to non-organic prices. So you can really tell there's a big difference, because it means that there's a bit more of a division within the customer base, but we also have free food available, and we track how much people access all of this food. And we also have food from Suma and Zaytoon. And yeah, so we have a wide amount of food available, and people access what they want to within St. Hilda's East Food Co-op. But we don't have access to that funding, Bridging the Gap funding, that both of your food co-ops are going for.
Yeah, got very lucky. No, we got...
It's not lucky. I think it's like, it's great. Like, yeah. You've recognized a need, and as did a funder. And like, you're working towards like more systemic change. So it's not just about individuals choosing to buy things that are better for the planet and their health, like, etc., when it's not just on individuals to make that choice.
Totally. Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, the difference of St. Hilda's. And I think that the behind that, the Bridging the Gap and Sustain, and we had all that contact, and they sort of wanted to use our two co-ops for their pilot, obviously for their research and working along with the two different universities as well, is that because we were newly set up, we were quite malleable, and they could sort of use that to kind of, we could put all in all our research together. Whereas I think I don't know if it would have been possible for them, because St. Hilda's is so established and has all these different threads, like you say. It was almost like that kind of what Sustain and Bridging the Gap, that program, kind of using, in a way, you know, we've sort of just set up. So it sort of worked for them to work with us and fund us as kind of like new co-ops.
It might be worth actually just elaborating a little bit more on, which you have done, about Bridging the Gap and who Sustain are. For anyone who doesn't know, like, how did Sustain get in contact with you? because I guess this is part of the wider question around like the setups of food co-ops, how they can sustain themselves, and funding is seems to be something that comes up quite a lot. So it would be good to know about that. And then I want to come back to this whole kind of concept of organic food and what that means. And you mentioned, Zoe, about St. Hilda's East being able to provide a lot of their produce at a 20% cheaper price than what you would get in supermarkets. And I wondered if that was something that was stable or if that shifts based on season and crop, etc. So what I'll do first is I'll quickly come back and address the question around organic food and why there is a push towards organic, because it almost suggests that organic is healthier or it's better. But also the wording and the language around like organic food, who is that accessible to? Because in my head, you know, organic also equals expensive. And when you're thinking about what your wealth bracket might be, or traditionally who might be able to eat that way, it's not always people, say, who come from low income families or who have large families, because it's about sustenance, it's about feeding, and sometimes thinking about the quality of the food as much as you want that to be a priority, so it doesn't have that ripple effect on your health and all the other things that are associated to it. There is a wider conversation around organic food.
Romana and I put together some like surveys sort of pre-pilot around the area where we were door knocking and asking that very question. And it was actually really challenging. And there was that immediate, as soon as we mentioned organic, there was a very kind of like that association for people, which just that's only for people that can afford it. I almost don't even believe in organic, and it's just completely inaccessible.
Or it's not a real thing.
So what's really interesting, obviously we're only a tiny, you know, it's of course we're not reaching kind of wider networks, but what we have noticed is that because of the, it's almost like people can't quite believe that they can actually afford to buy organic food. And that really needs to come up in the kind of end of pilot research to be fed back to, and they, is that people now are like, wow, if I can, the appreciation of the quality and the organic food and the understanding of its nutritional value and where it comes from and all of that is actually really appreciated by some of those people that just, it was just a barrier. You know, the word organic is such a barrier. And it would like kind of the idea that if this pilot could work towards kind of getting government subsidies in the end, that could break down that idea of that kind of class divide and monetary value around the word organic. Kind of needs to be discussed more of what it, I don't know, the hope is to be able to talk about organic without it being this kind of barrier of affordability. And that's definitely noticing that breaking down a little bit. And of course, that's, I know that's only a tiny degree, like tiny part of the community.
And it's worth just at this moment also asking them, why is it that, is that what sustain or bridging the gap this kind of pilot is trying to test out?
Partly, yes.
And who are sustain?
Sustain's a big organization within London that like actually operates nationally and works on a lot of different projects to do with food and sustainability and climate. And yeah, they fund a lot of projects. They start a lot of networks. Exactly. One of their aims within this project, Bridging the Gap, which is one of their big funding parts at the moment, that they're like funding different pilots, is specifically to see what would bridge the gap for the UK to transition to organic farming, which, yeah, believe research that organic farming has numerous benefits for the planet, for people's health, etc. What would like bridge the gap? And one of their points, like they have like various focus areas, is around like what would make it affordable, accessible, because there's often a narrative that people don't buy organic because they don't value it, they don't understand it, they don't know about it. But is it just because it's really expensive?
Yeah, if price wasn't an issue.
And so, I mean, like, is so, yeah. So like with St. Hilda's, for example, like there's the two, there's organic and there's not organic. It's really clear amongst that customers choose one or the other based on what they can afford, or a mixture, you know. But this project also gives people access to free food vouchers, which they don't have to spend at the co-ops. Mm-hmm. They can choose to spend at this particular market stall through the Alexander Rose Foundation, and people who access them already are in receipt of them. It might just increase how many they access, it's basically a way of seeing like if it's basically much cheaper, do people want to access organic food? That's what's being tested in this.
So it makes me want to ask, what's wrong with non-organic food?
I mean, I do understand that there is a detrimental effect on sperm quality. Scientific research has shown that it has had a dramatic impact
That's because of, mineral depletion in the soil.
So it's centered around, it's about the quality of the food. Yeah. It's non-organic.
It's the nutritional density and the
and the
quality.
Pesticides that are used, and it's just it's so damaging to insects and soil and water table. It just
works. I guess health, there's a lot of research yet to still.
I mean, it's a whole other podcast in itself just to talk about that.
Exactly, which was what I was going to say. So I'm going to move on and then kind of ask you all about what do you think are the advantages and the challenges of running a food co-op? Now, specifically thinking about sustainability, funding, which has been mentioned already, suppliers, customers.
One of the challenges is how to deal with bad weather because people don't turn up. So that's affected bad weather. I think that's across the board for any kind of retail. Bad weather just keeps people away. And if you've got lots of fresh produce that you don't have enough storage for, then there's a risk that it's going to spoil. That's a challenge.
Partly because these are pop-up shops as well. So there's really limited opening times. And I think one thing that's crucial to making a food co-op in this style work is having access to free space and some storage, even if you can't have mm-hmm. a perfect amount. We all have access to storage for the scales and tables, for example.
I mean, it is a job. A person has to do this work to get the delivery sorted, it priced up, it set up, packed away. So it is a job. So that is a challenge. How would we be able to fund it if we weren't getting paid from another source? Because we want to keep the prices really low. Is there a way to do it?
And also, like you say, space. So we have been able to set up because we have a space ready. And that would be a big challenge if you were somebody coming wanting to set up a co-op. It's finding the space, finding the funding, your own time capacity, and anyone who can help you deliver it.
I think it can be done. It can still be done. If there are enough people interested and wanting it, it can work for anyone. I think anyone can set it up.
And so I think what we're hoping is that with our having ours set up as an example, and I think that was always kind of the idea at the beginning of setting this up and this new lot of funding at the beginning. Well, a year ago now that we got to set these up, is that this would expand. This could be seen as something that works and that we could set up more throughout Tower Hamlets. Because like we say, we're only three little areas, all in the food deserts, as we talked about at the beginning. There's so much more scope to have these spaces and pop-up shops in other, throughout
community centres, if they were.
Other community centres, yeah. Or other spaces, if it's not possible for a community centre. There's ways that it could expand.
So it's food co-ops, in order to exist, kind of rely on community spaces and hopefully, ideally, that being free to be able to run from there. So there is that. There's also organisation and people running it. And this is something, Zoe, you and I and Shiri spoke about with regards to Cooperation Town and how they operate. And do you want to mention maybe in a couple of sentences or a few words how that model, say, differs from the food co-ops that the Just Fact program we're working with and this idea we're testing on trying to broaden them out in the borough of Tower Hamlets?
Sure. Yeah. So they're very different models in terms of structure and funding, especially. So Cooperation Town, as you may remember or know, they're groups of neighbors who get together and organize to buy things collectively. And they also need usually access to they always need access to a free community space. So there's a big overlap between them. And it's 20 households on average, but usually pretty much 20 households. Whereas these operate as pop-up shops. For example, Romana and Melly, and also people at St. Hilda's East Food Co-op, Cindy and Yo-Yo, we fundraise for their roles. And then we use the space for free. And the great thing is because they're in really active community centers, people are already using the space, coming in for lots of other things. Any members of the community that are socially isolated also sometimes have come in through the food co-op to find out about other services they can use in the community centers. And then the shop is set up, volunteers are involved. There's a lot of volunteer involvement, and then it goes away. So it's it's set up for a few hours, open access. There's not a membership. It's not a members cooperative where you need to pay in and to help make decisions and volunteer your labor or anything like that. And it's not workers cooperative. It's much more there's a paid person at each that's 2 days on average, 1.5 to 2 days. And then there's volunteers who make it all happen as well. And then it's open access. So that's a really excellent thing about it. It's and then the paid person also applies for funding and like has these interesting meetings, like sets up relationships with individual farms, for example, like you've done, Romana, with Folks Farm. And like, so yeah, that's how they differ. One is funding dependent, obviously, and the other one is less so, but they also reach different people and in different ways.
And it's just quickly to think about like suppliers and say customer base.
When we started, it was about trying to get into this closed world of like warehousing and distribution, which was really interesting and very peculiar and very specific way of working, and being subject to the way they work and how they price things and how we're charged. Dealing with that was, getting used to that was really interesting. But then also they were able to drop us whenever they felt like it. So we had challenges trying to find other people. So we've had goodwill on our side from other places that have been willing to step in and support our project in terms of supply side. But I think, and also what we were doing, like Zoe said, we were like building our own relationships with farms to try and like cut that out completely and be more local. So we've been working and kind of pushing at the edge of what's possible for our co-ops. And we're continuing to do that to see if we can reach more people, see if we can be more sustainable. So we're continually having these conversations and building relationships with other local organizations to see where we can actually take it. And having this kind of structure has allowed us to experiment and think a bit more freely about these things.
That just reminded me, actually, because we were talking about when we first heard from Sustain, and what you were just saying just reminded me that when we had our first supplier, this is where we just contact every organic farm that we can, because that's what we wanted to do initially. So that was, say, 3 months into the co-op, or maybe not even that, maybe 9 weeks or something. And that's when I just remember we emailed every organic farm that we were aware of. And within that was Danny, who is now how we now work directly with the Better Food Shed, because we contacted ground communities. And I remember at the time, he wasn't able to quite help us at the beginning. But then obviously it all sort of came together and it sort of gone back around full circle to one of the original people that we contacted, one of the original farms that we contacted maybe back in April. And then a couple of months later, it all kind of fitted together with pushing this pilot forward. As Romana said, we were really kind of pushing this from the beginning, but it's taken this time to kind of get everything set up. And again, it's getting funding in place that takes a lot of the time and everything that the funders need from us, because they needed obviously the data and all the kind of idea of how we work in a good chunk of 3 months of that before we could go ahead with it. So it was almost like we had to go through all these challenges to get to where we are.
And it sounds now. Like there's been a lot of challenges. So I guess I'm wondering now, like, what about your customer base? Do you find that people are responsive to the food co-ops in these desert spaces? How has that been welcomed, or how has that been?
It's been hugely welcomed. I mean, I think our communities are quite different. But I can say for around the Teviot Centre, I certainly, when we first opened up, when I first launched with the original supplier back in March, you know, that first couple of weeks, like huge influx, kind of real excitement about the co-op coming back. Because obviously these were the same customers and the same residents in that area that had been using the pilot the previous year. But bear in mind that 6 month pilot that was at the beginning of 2022 was, you know, a year, you know, 6 months, a year before the kind of huge cost of living crisis. And so they were kind of coming back to the co-op expecting the exact same prices, which obviously we wanted to do, but our suppliers, our bills were so expensive that we had to go with, you know, selling everything at cost price at the beginning. And I'd say that was certainly really noticed. After a kind of the initial couple of weeks of the excitement of the co-op being up and running, we had a lot of people just saying this is just too expensive. And that felt really like we weren't delivering what we were hoping, which had a big effect on like, oh, this isn't where we were hoping to be. But that definitely peaked and troughed, and we certainly got a very reliable customer base. And we've been able to kind of work around that and shift around prices. A lot of that also is our delivery was insanely expensive to begin with. So we're now on our fourth supplier. So this organic with the Better Food Shed, which is who we order through as part of the Bridging the Gap program, is our fourth supplier. And over that time, because the prices have changed so much, I don't know, I feel like we've kind of settled into a reliable customer base now.
Yeah, I get like a queue of people outside the door before the door opens. So that's really great.
So there is this excitement about organic produce. I mean, because it's affordable, I just have to keep saying that's what it is. If it was expensive organic, this wouldn't be, there would be, obviously, it wouldn't be working in the same way.
But even before the organics, I remember quite a few times I came to visit your food cart, Romana, and I was like, it's been half an hour since you've opened. Where I sold the food.
You're like, oh, yes. I think it's taken this time, though, to build it, to get into a place where, like, customers love coming. Like,
you had to shorten the opening hours.
I know, because it goes so quickly, because everyone's so worried that it's going to sell out. They turn up early and they just, like, really get their shopping done, you know.
That sounds great. That actually sounds like, you know, you're responding to a need within the community and people are excited, they want this. What tips or advice would you give to anyone wanting to set up a food co-op or join one?
First thing that comes to mind is to get involved as a volunteer first, maybe in one center, or and that way kind of understand the food network. If we're talking about just in Tower Hamlets at the moment, or even beyond that, it's kind of getting an idea about how the food networks work. And because obviously we all run, like, I mean, it's thanks to the volunteers for all of us and all the work that we do that things are possible to keep running. And I think it's, yeah, maybe start with volunteering and understanding how it works is probably a really good way to begin.
I think there's enough of you that want it. It's really doable. I think it's just that consistency and commitment from people that want to access it, I think. If you've got time, if you've got a venue, if you've got support, then it's a different story. Then you can set it up and then people will come. But if you're going to set it up with little resources, maybe without a venue, you just have to know that there are people that are interested in it. And once you've got that interest from people, it's figuring out, okay, do you want to go the wholesale route or do you want to build a relationship with the farm? And those things are both doable, I think. It helps to have like conversations around recipes and meal planning, what you would buy in a week for which recipes. I think that's really helpful to have in mind, because otherwise food just goes to waste if you're not very precise and deliberate in what you're buying. But I think with getting a supplier, it's not difficult. You just have to decide whether you want to do it through a wholesaler or whether you want to do it with the farm directly. It just depends on how committed you are to doing something, to cutting the supermarkets out and challenging the power that they have over food.
Oh, I wish we had started with that. The power food supermarkets have over food. This is why food co-ops exist, because we want to transfer that power to the local community.
It is not good what they're doing. It does not work. Nobody wins except the supermarkets. And we need to challenge that.
And empower the empower our local residents as well to feel like they are kind of making that change and better for them and their families, as well as for the environment.
And also, whilst we're in a hostile funding environment for like this sort of like for food in to be the system to be changed, part of why these food co-ops exist rather than just setting up food banks and similar structures within all these community centres is in response to the fact that food banks are so unsustainable and people do need them for longer than they're allowed to access them. And so like this is, it's not fixing the problem like perfectly at all, but it's just one of the ways that all three of these communities are like trying to deal with food insecurity, basically like creating a route to more accessible food within their local areas, within our local areas. Yeah, I just thought I should say that, because we also do hope that like that conversation does eventually get to the government and funding level and council level, because like food shouldn't be a commodity in the way that it is. Like it shouldn't be possible for people to be experiencing food insecurity on such a wide scale in Tower Hamlets, in Britain, in the world. It's like, it's ridiculous that we have a right to it. But yeah, I just wanted to say like, hopefully the funding environment does change so that we can have more of these community driven like solutions. And not have to rely on charity, because that's not what this is.
Yeah, people would rather choose. They would rather choose rather than have to like take the leftovers that nobody else wants and process foods on top of that. Totally. I think there's an issue with supermarkets not treating farmers well. Obviously, that's a known fact. Secondly, they're not held to account for the bad buying choices that they make, because they're able to sell off their surplus to food banks. I didn't know that councils bought surplus food. I thought it was just donated. It's not actually all donated. So they're never held to account for it. And yeah, that needs to be challenged.
And food waste.
In fact, Cindy would probably hate if I didn't mention this, but like something that Cindy, who works in St. Hilda's East Food Co-op, she's really passionate about like the like reducing of waste amongst the customer rates, like giving everyone the choice to buy how much they need, how much they want. St. Hilda's East Food Co-op does have a little bit of dry foods that you can select, but just even for fruit, she's done some quantitative analysis of how much packaging the food co-op uses compared to like our local Sainsbury's, and it is significantly less. So yeah, I think in all of these ways, and just by providing a more local option, almost all of the customers at St. Hilda's East Food Co-op, at least, and probably at both of yours, like come on foot,
yeah,
or like a couple on bicycle. But like really it's very different than having to drive. A lot of people do drive in London. So
really interesting about the idea of packaged food. Who determines how much food is packaged within a box or a bag or something? Whereas you have the choice going to a food co-op to select how much you want and how much you need, say if it's just for yourself, if it's for a family of three or five of 10, however it might be. It sounds really exciting. And I think it's a great alternative to the kind of huge supermarkets that exist.
So just one last point on packaging is that we are now completely plastic free, which is fantastic. And that's, I mean, right from the beginning, I operated on you have to bring your own bag, and people have really adapted to that. Everybody brings their own bags. Now, it's the beginning, people were a little bit shocked and they wanted their plastic bag. And I just thought, this is going to be from the get-go. And that has really, now everyone brings their own bags. Nobody asks for a bag anymore. And with our delivery now from the local organic farms, the only things that we have, like a couple of things in plastic that we just reuse to keep greens fresh. And that's literally for that purpose. Everything else is just in boxes that we return to the farm. So that is so good. There's none of those plastic layers that you get between the fruit that we were getting before. You're just thinking, this is so unnecessary. So it's really like great to say that we are, 99% plastic free, or 99.9% plastic free.
Amazing. Where can people access or come to the food co-ops?
St. Hilda's East food co-ops open every Thursday from 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. We're in Shoreditch.
Okay, so Leaders and Communities Food Co-op is also open on a Thursday, 11 till 3:30, and that you will find us at the Teviot Centre in Poplar.
Thank you so much for all chatting to me today. It's been really insightful. It's been really useful. And I feel like I know a little bit more about how you guys run and operate.